Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Dungeon of Doom. I am Kyle Meinke, Lions beat writer for MLive.com, joined as always by Ben Raven. It is, what, Monday afternoon. Ben, have you...
Your guess is as good as mine.
Have you recovered from a week of madness?
Man, no. No, I have not, because the apparently attention-needy Lions, I'm just kidding, have needed 19 press conferences not related to the draft in the last week. But no, it's...
We're currently in Allen Park for... Penei Sewell, you know, one of the two record contracts signed. Also, in addition to welcoming 775,000 of their closest friends to Detroit over the last few days, six-man draft class, four trades. It has been a whirlwind.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the uniform reveal, the last 12 days have just blended together. But no, I'm just kidding. They're the Roselle winning PR staff for a reason. They're capitalizing on that national attention. And no, man, the first 2 days were the weirdest draft experiences of my life. You know, two full days, two picks, and then the last day, Brad Holmes is wheeling and dealing like it's Madden, man.
So, yeah, I want to dive in. You know, we're going to get, more, I think, more in-depth with the prospects in our next podcast, yeah. Kind of bring on some people who know what they're talking about with some of these prospects who have covered them in the past. I'm excited for that. But I guess just as you look, you know, at this class and what Brad Holmes has done, I think it's really undeniable to say – it was a home run.
Yeah.
You know, I learned a long time ago, doubt that man at your own peril.
Right.
You know, Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam LaPorta and Jack Campbell and those guys at the top of last year's draft. I mean, you know, there was a lot of hooting and hollering and bellyaching about what Brad Holmes did, positional value, all that. Brad Holmes comes out here on day two with a positional villain sweatshirt. Clearly, he's feeling his oats these days, and rightfully so. He had the best draft class in last year's draft. He's the reigning NFL executive of the year. He took over from the Quinn Trisha era, and in 3 years was in the NFC Championship game. The resume speaks for itself. So I have very little doubt about this draft class that they got talented players. But I think when you look at the positions they got them, particularly early in the draft, the Lions had an unsightly pass defense last year for a very good team. It was the biggest weakness, and they go out there and hammer that weakness with their two favorite prospects in the draft, Terrion Arnold, Enos Rakestraw. I love what they did going corner to corner top of the draft. It was more polarizing, I think, for some fans. I guess, where did you land on the approach at the top of the draft?
Well, in my day two fits for MLive, I still had two or three cornerbacks on my list. And I got a couple emails, not going to call anybody out by names, but they were like, why would they add another cornerback? Why would they add another cornerback? And it's just like, I'm sorry, but I look at Emmanuel Mosley, one-year deal, two torn ACLs. I look at Amik Robertson. Solid player who fits what they're trying to do, but largely unproven at a starting level everyday role, one-year contract. Carlton Davis, one-year deal left on his deal. Like, what they did with Terrion Arnold and Enos Rakestraw, you have solidified the short and long term of that position. I think Brad said it best when he talked to us whenever it was early Saturday morning, Friday night, saying, you know, for 3 years we've been like, man, I'd love to build out the future of that cornerback room. It just hasn't fallen to them, and they're just not going to force cornerback, like he said. You got two guys like that fall into your laps. You don't even have to move around for Rakestraw. You get him at 61. This is somebody for 2 months we were talking about as a potential first-round fit. I mean, and Terrion Arnold, man, I mean, he was right up there for me with Quinlan Mitchell as CB1. Like, it was really CB1A and CB1B every time I did a mock or a prospect ranking. It's like, man, I have a really tough time between these two guys. So I loved the doubling up, because what you have done is you've given yourself more positional versatility. You've given yourself the best chance to have the best starting lineup next season in your secondary. And that's a very good thing, man. That's like you said, it was 29th ranked pass defense and net passing yards per attempt. And that was this team's weaknesses.
I think Brad Holmes put it best. He was asked about training camp and what that's going to look like at the corner. He called it a bloodbath.
Yeah. Took offense to logjam, but
it was amazing. Like it really is. For this team's biggest weakness and all the struggles we've seen, I mean, they like 5 years straight, they've been one of the two worst teams in passing yards allowed per attempt. It's been unsightly. And even last year when you have one of the league's best rosters, you're skating through the postseason, but you're still allowing 311 passing yards per game. I mean, I just think in the championship game, right, the NFC championship game, the ball bouncing off Kendall Vildor's face for a 52-yard touchdown the other way. Was a perfect encapsulation of what we've watched for years in the Lions pass defense, and they had to get better there, and they've tried in free agency, and Brad Holmes has tried. Yeah. He's thrown money at Cam Sutton, thrown money at Manuel Mosley, thrown money at CJ Gardner-Johnson, even the second round pick last year on Brian Branch, which was a slot, but there's been significant investment in the secondary, in the corner position, with very little return outside of Branch. And in Terrion Arnold and Enos Rakestraw, you have acquired a future. Okay. And that's the difference for me. And it's not just two great corner prospects, which they are. They were the two best corners last year in the SEC, the nation's best conference. This stuff speaks for itself. Terrion Arnold allowed a 50.7 passer rating last year. Speaks for itself. 17 passes defended, 5 interceptions, which led the SEC. It speaks for itself. But beyond that, Ben, we know this regime. Like, I think what makes them so good as drafters is they're not just drafting production or traits or whatever. It's fit. Yeah. It's scheme fit. It's culture fit. It's the grit that you can't throw a rock in this building without hitting the word grit written on a wall somewhere. We all know it, but they live it and they breathe it, and they've done a great job of mining it in the draft. Guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown, for example, on day 3, and now he's a first-team All-Pro and one of the highest-paid receivers in the history of the game. And that's what I like about Terrion Arnold and Enos Rakestraw. You watch these guys tape. You talk to people around them. You listen to analysts. It just screams badass mother effort. It does. These guys freaking hit. I mean, Rakestraw, he's a nice cover man. He's really good in zone. Got some other things to work on, I think, in man and so forth. But the guy hits. He hits hard. He's nasty. These guys are going to bring the edge that Detroit wants. And they're high-end developmental guys. I mean, not developmental guys, but they're high-end prospects that give you a bona fide future, Ben. Something that we haven't really seen since Darius Slay was run out of the building. And that, for me, is the difference with this team. And when you live in a division where you've got three young quarterbacks coming after you, coming after the crown, I love what they did at the top of this draft.
I do too. It's almost like Brad Holmes was watching the NFC title game when the Lions failed to protect a 2 or 3 score lead when they knew the Niners were going to be dropping back and passing and stuff like that. And to your point, the two top run graded cornerbacks by Pro Football Focus and all of FBS last season, Terrion Arnold, Enos Rakestraw Jr. Like, that's not what they're coming into. They're not coming in to be in the box stuffers, but to have that willingness, to have that proven tape, to be doing that inside the SEC, it's fantastic. Terrion Arnold, I mean, I have a hard time not seeing him having an extremely meaty role from the beginning of the season. Yeah. Rakestraw might take a minute, but I think he's not the same player Brian Branch, but like the concerns with Rakestraw were the same concerns with Brian Branch, and it's that straight line 40 speed. Brad Holmes sees past that, and I think that's why they loved him as much as they did, because he does look like a different player on tape than what that relative athletic score kind of speaks to. And that's a fit. The demeanor is the fit. And it's just, I have absolutely no qualms with what they did in the first two rounds. Nothing.
Yeah. For all the reasons already stated, and also they get tremendous value. Like when I did my annual draft analysis, like the best pick was Terrion Arnold. The best value was also Terrion Arnold. Listen, Ben, corner is a premium position in a passing league. It's drafted like it. It's paid like it. It's hard to get those guys. And when you want to draft a guy like that, it's top 15 every year. Like, there's been a corner drafted in the top 20 of every draft since 2009. And that when I went into my mock draft, I'm thinking about what could happen. I was thinking about these things like Terrion Arnold is the best fit for Detroit, its needs, like what it could do. And we, anyone who listened to the previous episode of this podcast, like if you haven't, go back and listen to it. I spent a couple minutes talking about, like, I've sat in this cafe for the last 3 hours figuring out, crunching the numbers, thinking about possible paths to link Terrion Arnold to Detroit in a trade. And in my mock, it got to 15 with the Saints. And I'm like, this guy's not going to drop any further than this. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, historically speaking, it doesn't happen. Positional value, it doesn't happen. There's too many teams that need a corner. You know, if the Lions want to get their man, and I believe that you know, Terry Arnold was their man, that's going to take a trade up. And I was looking at, like, you know, the trade value charts and so on. And I'm like, man, 29 to 15 for a team that has a bunch of late picks, you know, in all these rounds, no fourth rounder. You know, I thought about all the great day two, day three players that Brad Holmes has got and how many of those guys you'd have to sacrifice to move up for Terrion Arnold to 15. I'm like, it's just not going to happen. And so I didn't do it. Terrion Arnold goes 24th.
Unbelievable.
9 spots later. And of course, the big reason for that is you have 14 offensive players going at the top of this draft, doubling the all-time record. Like we knew this was an offensive heavy draft at the top, but like no one saw this kind of thing coming. And this thing coming played right into Brad Holmes's hands because they love Terrion Arnold. He fits the biggest need. And at 24, you gave up significantly less resources than you would have in a normal year where a guy like Terrion Arnold goes at 15 or something. You're giving away like high round picks or maybe even a player, a third round pick for Terrion Arnold, which is essentially what they gave up. Outstanding value for an outstanding player that fills the biggest need. That's a confluence that's made in heaven in the NFL draft. And I love the pick.
Yeah, Brad Holmes is probably thanking the heavens for the Minnesota Vikings, Denver Broncos, and the Atlanta Falcons because that rush on quarterback, the 6 quarterbacks in the first 12 picks, I mean, it's exactly like you said, that kind of shifted the board. We saw guys like Dallas Turner fall down to 17, and you see Minnesota making such a more aggressive play than what the Lions had to do to go up and get him. So I just think the only complaints I'm seeing about this draft are the 2 fourth-round picks, but then, I mean, Terrion Arnold, I agree with you, best value of this board. But then you look at their 2 sixth-round picks, and it's like, holy crap. Like, I just love Lions fans. They're like, can we just switch the 2 fourth-round picks with the 2 sixth-round picks and call that good? And it's just hilarious. Like, when the only 2 complaints, kind of widespread universal complaints, are about that, then that's it's unbelievable. Terrion Arnold was a – God, I cannot believe he was there at 24, man. I still can't believe it. So it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
A plus.
and again, just I just think about training camp. I think about when these guys arrive and going from last year where you have Kendall Vildor starting games, Jerry Jacobs, who's not even in the league at this moment, starting games for you. Fast forward into next year where you have Carlton Davis, who's he's the Taylor Decker of CB1s.
Like
he's not a star, not a lot of Pro Bowls and all that, but a very solid guy. A guy you can win with. On one side of the field, you have Terrion Arnold, the best corner in the draft, according to many, including Detroit. You know, he was actually the second corner off the board overall, but high-end premium prospect that you can put on the other side of the field. Or if he needs time to develop, which a lot of corners do, I think Darius Slay provides a nice roadmap for that, where he started right away, but he was pretty rough that rookie season. He got benched actually before really turning it around in year 2 and becoming an all-pro. You know, if Terrion Arnold needs more time like that, the Lions have enough depth where they can put him on the bench and have him learn the game that way. You went out and signed Amik Robertson. He can play out wide. You have Kendall Vildor back, Emmanuel Mosley back. Like these are veteran options with starting experience where you can let Arnold bide his time. And if he's ready, you can throw him out there too. And they're going to have no qualms with that. You have Ennis Rakestraw as the, you know, a future developmental piece, a youth piece at that position. Ben, Terrion Arnold, Ennis Rakestraw, all these guys, they also have flex to play inside. Mm-hmm. And when you go back to the owner's meetings, and I'm sitting at that breakfast table with Dan Campbell, and he's talking about how, you know, like we really thought about Brian Branch playing safety some last year, but we realized, you know, like maybe we just only give him so much information and let him do well with that. But maybe this year, you know, we do some safety stuff. Like that bug has been in my ear. And now seeing them go out and grab 2 more corners who have that flex to play on the inside, and Amik Robertson has played there as well, before, you know, with the Raiders too. they have so many bullets to throw inside if they want to do that. And then move Brian Branch on that defense, a guy who can pick passes, blitz a quarterback, make tackles for loss, hard hitter, whatever, like that. You have the flexibility to move that chip around the defense. Now, it's going to be a bloodbath, and I'm really fascinated to see how the dust settles and who's where. I mean, they're going to have talent on the bench. When was the last time we could say that about the Lions, where they have talent sitting on the freaking bench at cornerback?
It's been unbelievable, and I do think the Brian Branch at safety stuff does carry a ton of freaking water, because you could feel good about Kirby Joseph and Ifeatu Melifonwu as your two top safeties. Kirby Joseph recovering from the hip procedure. Ifeatu Melifonwu, breakout dude. They don't do the things they do without him at the end of the season, but you can still call him someone with a lot of durability questions on him, and having that interchangeability. I mean, you look at the defensive line, you look at the linebackers, you look at the secondary. These guys will put guys in any position to see what they can do. And it's, I just really think that gives Aaron Glenn the full Rolodex, Deshae Townsend, the full Rolodex of moving these guys around. Because I just go back, Brad Holmes talking after Rakestraw, he's like, these are DBs, man. They can play outside. They can play inside. Some of these guys can play safety. Some of those safeties can come up and play slot. And it's just, expect that. There's going to be talent on the bench, but I do think there's a ton of freaking opportunities for all these guys to have a role, no matter how big, small, or medium on this defense. Like, this is a coaching staff that loves that versatility. And I think just listening to Brad, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what they were thinking with these two guys. Best player available, and also, wow, this works with what we've got.
It's beautiful. They didn't have to press it either. It's not like they reached for any of these guys. They got outstanding value with Arnold in round one. They got outstanding value with Rakestraw at 61st overall, a guy we're talking about at 29. And they fit your dog mentality. They fit your biggest need. Like I said earlier, the board couldn't have broken better for Detroit. And credit to Brad Holmes, too, for making that happen with the trade-up for Arnold.
What's going on, everyone? Ben Raven with MLive's Detroit Lions beat here. Just want to point in the direction of MLive's new Dungeon of Doom Insider Tech service. Sign up now for a 14-day free trial. And then after that, it's only $4.99 a month to text with myself, to text with Kyle Monkey, and to text with Corey Woods. And not only are you going to get updates and analysis from us with some one-on-one individual conversations on the side, but you're going to be on the front line to be featured on MLive's Dungeon of Doom podcast when we come calling for mailbag questions. Once again, check out joinsubtext.com/Dungeon of Doom. 14-day free trial, $4.99 after that.
Ben, we've talked pretty extensively about day one, day two. How about day three? It was wild. The Lions did not have a fourth round pick. And then in the span of like 15 minutes, they had two of them.
Just you shouting, Ben, you're on the clock.
Yeah, I know. Like, just to give people some perspective, like Ben and I, we split the posts on. We'll go back and forth on these posts when the Lions take somebody. It's moving fast. Things are happening fast. You get guys on teleconferences. You talk to Brad Holmes. Like, you just have to move fast. And, like, the Lions made the first trade. I'm like, oh, dang. I'm, like, writing. And then I see a second trade come in, and I'm like, Ben, just trying to avoid some disaster here. Like, you're up.
It was so funny.
Things are happening fast. Brad Holmes is being Brad Holmes. 10 draft day trades from Brad Holmes in the first 3 years. He tried to trade up for Jamar Chase in year one with his very first pick. Like, I've thought about that a lot, you know, because I think a lot of guys get a job like that. It's like, okay, I'm gonna, like, settle in, get comfortable. No, Brad Holmes, like, I'll trade up from, you know, to get Jamar Chase. Didn't happen. I think they're pretty happy with the guy they did get, Penei Sewell. We just saw him a few minutes ago after signing the largest deal in the league for an offensive tackle. Definitely worked out. But since then, Brad Holmes has shown to be, for me, Ben, one of the league's best GMs when it comes to two things. One, the talent evaluation, and two, showing calculated aggression to go get those guys. And it's easy to do it when a guy is like Jameson Williams, for example. I think it's more interesting when you see it like last year when they traded up for Brian Branch, guy who's falling. There's some questions about him. You know, what's his speed like after the combine? But Brad Holmes trading to get Brian Branch, and now he's like one of the best slots in the league, or even in round one of that draft. He's trading back because he wants Jahmyr Gibbs. And everyone's talking about Bijan Robinson. And he's like, give me Jahmyr Gibbs and give me Sam LaPorta in the trade back. And it's a home run. This guy really has a nice feel for the evaluation and then the aggression that it takes to move to the right spots on the board to get his guys. And he was laughing last year at us when he was getting some criticism for a quote unquote positional value. And of course he had the last laugh and all that. So I say all of that, Ben, to preface, you know, you go into day three and you get back to back to back trades, mm-hmm. including two back into round four. And it's four guys that are pretty unconventional, certainly not household names. offensive tackle Giovanni Manu in round four. If you're out there listening and you'd heard of the name Giovanni Manu before this, you probably have a problem.
Yes.
Because he's like 50th among offensive tackles. I mean, he was definitely like a priority free agent kind of guy. No one had a draftable grade on him in terms of the scouting community, the analyst community. But he is 6'8", 352 pounds. If you watch his tape at the University of British Columbia, and that's not a misprint. It's pretty ridiculous to see him. It looks like a varsity guy going against a freshman team guy. It's preposterous, but the size is phenomenal. He ran the 40 in 4.9, which is kind of scary to think about. He's long. He oozes traits, mm-hmm. and he had a really nice pro day workout. The Lions had some people there. Ray Agnew, who was kind of like one of the key men on the Amon-Ra St. Brown scout a few years ago, who turned out to be a pretty good fourth round pick. He goes to Brad Holmes and says, you got to watch this guy. And they watch this guy. They bring him in for a visit. And basically, Brad Holmes goes in, wakes up on day three of this draft. He's like, if I don't get Manu in the fourth round, I'm going to be heartbroken. Yeah. And so that's why he made the trade to go get him. But it is unconventional. It's a bit of a risk. Ben, I'm curious your thoughts on the trade up for Manu.
You know, Holmes has got an affinity for refrigerator size developmental projects. I mean, trading up to get Broderick Martin last year, trading up to get Manu this year. And I loved hearing Holmes talk about him because they post his highlight tapes. And even when Manu, he'll like stand straight up from his stance and he's still just throwing these middle schoolers around on the field. And I do think he's like, all right, this tape is like, you're watching him obviously play a pretty low level of competition, but getting him in, getting him in those pro day workouts, hearing the interest, like they were like, I think he said 9th or 10th in line on like a meeting with him on like the Sunday after the combine or something like that. And it's just, this is the team that is best built for a developmental offensive lineman for that. I don't care if he's a tackle, guard, or a center. You get him in there with the guys on that line. You get him in there with a guy. I mean, Manu idolizes Penei Sewell, which makes me feel ancient, which is just absolutely. But like, there's just such a good foundation to work with someone like that, to take a chance on somebody like this, because chances like this have hit before, and it's all about the right situation. He's getting compared to Jordan Mailata with the Eagles a lot, and I think that is a pretty similar foundation that he walked into and learned from and bumped shoulders with, and the right coaches. I mean, Hank Fraley, Taylor Decker, Penei Sewell. I mean, the veterans in that room, this is a great opportunity for this kid to really refine his development and face absolutely no pressure to contribute on the field this year. I mean, that is, I know when you trade up some picks for a day three type of guy, it's like, oh, they're going to play this guy. Look at what happened with Broderick Martin last year. He got like 8 snaps just to get a taste of it. And then went back to practice to keep working. I do think that is a pretty safe projection for Manu, but yeah, the size, the traits, they clearly are banking on some extreme untapped potential here. And I just think when you have the foundation that they have, you can take swings like that.
I think your last point is phenomenal, because, you know, if you're the Lions in 2021, I don't think you're trading up and giving away a future third rounder to get this guy. You know, no. They've taken Aleem McNeil in the third round. They've taken Kirby Joseph in the third round. Mm-hmm. They've taken Ife Melifonwu in the third round, Amon-Ra in the fourth. Like, these are the kinds of day three guys that they've been able to acquire with these kinds of picks, a pick they gave up to get a developmental offensive tackle. Probably doesn't happen a few years ago, but now that they have one of the best rosters in the NFL, listen, there's a lot of guys on day three who are simply not going to be competitive in training camp. Right. Like, what's the point of bringing in a guy who's going to be, who's going to have no shot of making this team? And that's what Brad Holmes said. He's like, okay, let me pack some of these picks together, move up guys that, hey, like, Manu's not going to play for this team this year. but there's untapped potential there that we can work with. And maybe he develops into something that maybe some of the other guys who are closer to their ceilings simply will never. And I get it. And yeah. I think it is risky. I like third round picks for Brad Holmes. He's phenomenal at that part of the draft. But if the Manu lottery ticket cashes, you've hit a grand slam at 126th overall. Mm-hmm. And again, I think your last point was great in that he's coming into the perfect situation to develop. I think sometimes people get too lost in, somebody took this particular player and it worked out or it didn't. Okay, so that was a good evaluation or it wasn't. It goes the other way around too. Like you're bringing guys in, you're developing them, you're turning them into what they are. A Penei Sewell, for example, they hit a home run on the evaluation, but also Penei Sewell developed in Detroit into what he is. It's fit, right? And Manu is coming into a situation where he doesn't have to play this year. He's got Penei Sewell to learn from. Taylor Decker to learn from. That's two really good players, good veterans, good teammates, part of one of the best offensive lines in the league. And by the way, led by one of the best offensive line coaches in the league in Hank Fraley. Yeah. This is like if Manu goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars, maybe he has a different trajectory in his career. Maybe it never works out. 6'8", 352 pounds of badass comes in and doesn't have to play for a year or two and can learn from some of the best people at his position, best coaches at his position in the league. Like you can learn, you can develop. And that's what the Lions, that's the lottery ticket the Lions are investing in.
Yeah. And just for a team that uses an extra sixth blocker so much, there are opportunities probably to get a taste along the way, you know, Dan Skipper and him. I just think even if he's just that extra blocker in sets in year two, that's on the right swing up right there. So, hey, 6'8", 352, what else needs to be said? They obviously see something in him, and that's kind of a scary rushing attack, thinking if that kid turns into a capable NFLer at that size and what they'd be able to do off of his back.
Manu wasn't the only trade of that day or that round or that half hour. Lions also traded up six picks later for Sione Vaki. Vaki was a safety at Utah. He led the Utes in defensive snaps last year. The Lions took him as a running back.
That's so awesome.
He did play running back in the last six games of last year because of it, like injuries just completely vanquished Utah's running back situation last year. So they gave him the ball and he averaged like 7.5 yards a carry over six games. Caught a bunch of passes too, lined up in the slot. Like everyone's like, how the hell is this safety doing this in the back half of his senior season? It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
The evaluations were all over the place, as you can imagine, with a guy like that. Detroit brought him in to meet with the offensive staff. He met with Ben Johnson, the coordinator, as well as running backs coach Scotty Montgomery. And Brad talked pretty extensively about, hey, we believe this guy can play safety. We've seen him play safety. We think he's capable. What we're intrigued by is what we saw in six games at running back and the upside there, the instincts from a guy who's not even a running back, and he looks instinctual at that position. So the plan for this guy is basically core special teamer across special teams immediately. Brad Holmes thought he was one of the best special teams players in the draft. There might even be some return value there, and returner is more valuable than ever right now with the kickoff coming back into play this year. And then some long-term upside in a running back room where, again, you are set with David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. But if you get a guy with some upside, maybe he turns out to be better than a Craig Reynolds. He gives you some future at that position as well, while giving you core special teams value. That's why the Lions, they gave up a fourth round pick in that trade up, but saw a lot of, you know, some short-term value and some long-term potential.
Yeah, I have a hard time projecting him as like a contributor on offense or defense just because of those unknowns. But like, when you look into his athletic traits, when you look into his downhill, just I'm not scared of shit style to his game, that is, this might be Dave Phipps' new favorite player. Like, and that's no offense to anybody else. I just see this guy will probably log every freaking special team snap available when healthy this season. I do think he is an instant impact special teamer. And when you have a roster like the Lions with so few holes and so few rooms for starting spots, pick 132 for a guy that might play a crap ton of Anthony Pittman snaps, like 300 plus special team snap in that department. That's worth it. And he does have that upside because five touchdowns in six games. Like you said, it was a ridiculous rushing average, and he was getting traditional hand ducks, H-back, fullback, wildcat quarterback, slot. So it's just
– while leading his team in defensive snaps. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's his stat sheet was unbelievable, and it was funny to switch from, like, PFF to The Athletic, and some viewed him as a running back. Some viewed him as a safety, and it's just – I think Vaki said it best. For year one, I'm all about special teams, and I really do think, like you said, with the new kickoff rules, whether he's running down to make stops or whether he's back there to try and return kicks and – going to be a really hard guy to tackle just by how he is so kind of powerful and strangely explosive. Like, he's a very unique athlete, and I just think a perfect build for special teams.
I think we agree. We love what the Lions did at the top of this draft. We agree that there's some risk in the trades in round four, but obviously they're taking those risks because they think there's some potential there where they could crack the lineup where maybe some of these other guys on day three would never have a chance in Detroit. So some risk, but some potential there. In round six, they got the last two draft picks of the class, Mekhi Wingo, defensive tackle out of LSU, and then in the guard, Christian Mahogany out of BC. Crazy that they got them in the sixth round, because I think, particularly in Mahogany's case, he was a trendy guy for Detroit in the middle rounds, and it's a little befuddling he dropped as far as he did. I think at the end of the day, they got two, again, grit fits, if you will. In Detroit, I think Wingo is your kind of like undersized defensive tackle who could have some pass rush value, particularly on the edge. I think that's the way the Lions view him. They view him a little bit differently than the role he played at LSU. Yeah. The Mahogany, dirtbag. That was the word du jour after the pick, and he loved it. He's a Jersey kid. Doesn't take crap, according to Brad Holmes. What'd you think of the trench plays they made on day three?
The Wingo pick, that is best player available to a team, and especially to the fact that they see a little pass rushing potential out of him. You know, high character team captain. They love to talk about him wearing number 18 at LSU. That is a big deal there. But Mahogany, man, that was my number one fit for day three. He was at the top of my list for a reason. I think he probably fell because he missed all the 2022 with an ACL injury, but I really don't give a crap about that because he came back last season and gave up no quarterback hits, no sacks across 867 snaps, dipped his toe at right tackle a little bit, like 40, 50 snaps or something like that there. And I just think when interior offensive line was kind of a long-term potential need, you know, Zeitler's on a one-year deal like we talked about. Graham Glasgow, he's back on a multi-year deal, but he's 33, 34, something like that. Building long-term stability with an old-school throwback mauler who has shown just kind of like unrefined ability in pass protection. Yeah, the same things for Manu go for Mahogany. I mean, he's going to be a little higher up the depth chart than Manu this year, and I just think getting to work with those interior offensive linemen, getting to work with Hank Fraley, who specifically knows interior offensive line play better than anybody in this freaking building, is just – yeah, that works, man. Guards and tackles get hurt a lot. And when you have a guy like that and you got that built-in versatility, this helps because this guy is, I mean, if it weren't for Arnold somehow falling to the Lions, this would be the best value pick to me is Mahogany, because 210, I think it was, that's almost unheard of for where I think The Athletic hit him with a third or fourth round grade, man. Everywhere did. So just way to go, Brad.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if you saw the clip bouncing around social, but Mahogany got a carry at BC, scored a touchdown. Did you see the celebration?
Hell yeah, I did.
Keg stands. Yeah. It was amazing. I think he's going to fit in just fine with Dan Campbell.
Yes.
I love what they did in terms of the mix of attacking needs, getting some potential, getting some stability guys at the back of the draft for the trenches. You address things for the now, you address things for the future. You did give away some future assets, a third and fourth round pick next year's draft. That is concerning to me. It makes the risk on the trades in the fourth round bigger, because if they don't cash, you've given up also additional resources to make those lottery tickets happen. But we, at the end of the day, like it. We love Brad Holmes' ability to, again, evaluate and to move into the parts of the board where he can get his guys. And I think that he's one, when it comes to that in this game, landing your guys, I think Brad Holmes is among the best and is a big reason why the Lions are where they are today. But Ben, having said that, you can't address every need in every draft. So I guess as we look forward to OTAs in just a couple of weeks here and the start of practice. I guess, where do you see the biggest unaddressed needs or the biggest question marks with this team coming out of the draft?
A wide receiver three. That's nothing against J-Mo. That's nothing against Donovan Peoples-Jones. I think J-Mo, we've said it a million times, we'll say it again, he's a different type of receiver. Donovan Peoples-Jones, I like his traits. I like the idea on paper of Donovan Peoples-Jones, but where's it been the last 2.5, 3 years? So I do think that there is a slight hole at the top of the wide receiver depth chart for the short-term thinking for this year. So I do think wide receiver, maybe finding a veteran guy, figuring something out there. I do like the Isaiah Washington cat that they signed undrafted out of Illinois. Like, he was a very draftable player to me that I like. So
he also got like $225,000 guaranteed.
Take that, Ryan Pope.
I mean, that it's one of the biggest numbers I've seen among a UDFA in Detroit ever. And that's a good sign that the obviously doesn't guarantee anything, but it's a very good sign. They believe he has a very legitimate chance to make this roster and contribute.
Yeah. So it's like, it's kind of like Peoples-Jones watch for me, because he I think you had him in the starting lineup in the way too early depth chart, and that's exactly what I'd do too. That is like the one part I would red highlight on that depth chart right now, is kind of maybe find another receiver who can contribute this year.
I agree with you, and we didn't even talk about J-Mo, and you know, the thing with J-Mo is that his skill set is undeniable. Yes. It's unrelenting. The speed, like, obviously we love J-Mo. Mm-hmm. You saw what he did down the stretch last year. But what he did down the stretch last year was kind of like, it's not even a gadget player, but it was like every one of his touches, every one of his big plays, every one of his touchdowns felt like a bonus. Yes. It was like you have Amon-Ra, you have Sam Laporta, you have Josh Reynolds, Jameer Gibbs. You have all these guys where you need a play on third down. You know where you're going with the rock. And then, J-Mo scored a 40-yard touchdown. That's pretty sweet too. Next year is going to be different for J-Mo. J-Mo is going to be, Josh Reynolds is now in Denver. So J-Mo is going to be wide receiver two, basically. And when you have St. Brown as a superstar in the slot, you do still have Laporta and Gibbs. It's not like Jared Goff's still going to have so many places to go with the football. But when it comes to the receiver position, J-Mo is going to be the top guy on the outside. He's going to be wide receiver two overall. My question is he ready for that? Because, and maybe he is. Mm-hmm. The talent is so good. How far he came last year, Ben, from what we saw in training camp to what we saw in the final 5-6 games of last season was monumental. And so, so maybe he turns into a stud on the outside. Maybe he turns into a star on the outside. Like, it's in his DNA.
Absolutely.
But we haven't seen it to this point. And so there's an unknown naturally going forward when you rely on that guy to become your next Josh Reynolds, where, it's third down. They're doubling Amon-Ra. You have to go to somebody else. Is J-Mo ready to be that guy? Like, he hasn't had to be that guy to this point. He's got the skill to be that guy going forward, but can he be is a question for me. And then, of course, the wide receiver three, position two with DPJ. Like, maybe Peoples-Jones is that guy. I think there's going to be competition coming for that spot. 5 catches in 8 games, I think, says a lot about DPJ after the trade last year. He will have a full offseason to acclimate. Yeah, I saw pictures of him working out with Jared Goff out in California this offseason. Clearly, he's doing everything he can. But I agree with you that they're, it's a very good team, very loaded. Ben, it's a top 5 offense back-to-back years. Yeah. You got major, major help coming at your biggest positions of weakness on defense. This is a Super Bowl contender that got better in the draft. We love that. Every team's got weaknesses. I think this team on the perimeter, on the offensive side of the football, to me, has some real question marks going into training camp.
Yeah, because the beauty of Josh Reynolds is that I think Jared Goff can close his eyes, take a snap, drop back, and throw the ball and know where he's going to be. So that's not where J-Mo was the last time we saw him, but maybe he can get there this offseason. Maybe an uninterrupted, healthy offseason gets him there. And like I said, Peoples-Jones is easy to believe in when you see him in person. It just hasn't translated on the field the last couple of years. So we'll see, man. It's a meaty offseason, but I agree with you. This is a Super Bowl contender, favorite in the NFC North, no matter how much better that division got. And they're locked and loaded and primed to get back to where they were last year, if not further.
That's what we got coming out of the draft, guys. Lots to like. And I'm really intrigued to see how the corner battles play out, because they have so many directions they can go. We'll be back again probably next week, I think, is our next episode. We'll bring in some experts to talk about these Lions draft picks. Get a good granular feel beyond the headlines of what some of these guys can provide the Lions going forward. Ben, get a nap in, man.
Yeah. It needs to happen.